And now it's time for Power of Prophecy, continuing the legacy of Tex Mars, exposing evil, and promoting Jesus Christ as Savior. Here's your host, Jerry Barrett.
Hello, friends, and welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. I'm your host, Jerry Barrett, honored to have you join me again this week. It is time for my favorite program of the month. We are going to do secrets. We are up to number 350. That number just, for some reason, that number smacked me upside the head this week when I realized that we were all the way up to number 350. I guess 349 didn't stick in my head like 350 has, but I am so thankful to all of you who tune in and listen each week and continue to pray and support the ministry. It means a lot to Sandra and myself to continue the legacy of Tex and Wanda and everything they've built. I am going to contact Wanda and see if I can get her on in the next week or two and just talk about what prompted her to start the Children's Home Project. A number of you have faithfully donated to that program. We've been able to bless hundreds and hundreds, maybe thousands of children over the almost 30 years, I think, we've been doing the program. And I'm going to try to get Miss Wanda to come on, give us an update on how she's doing, and just visit with her for a little bit. But before we get into this week's secrets program, I have a number of prayer requests. Now, I have been praying for these individuals, but I need our prayer warriors to ramp up the prayer for our friends. Mark D. emailed me, and he asked that we pray for the voices in his head to go away. And he said, thank you. Khalil, a faithful member of Power of Prophecy for a long time, sent in a prayer request for a Navy veteran who is aiming to build a business for himself and to create jobs in his neighborhood. That's an outstanding endeavor. It's tough being a small business owner, especially in today's climate with taxes and regulations and government overreach, but I pray that this man is successful in his endeavor and that he is able to have his own business and support his community by offering jobs to those in his area. Philip emailed and he asked that we pray for Pastor Charles Jennings. He suffered a brain bleed and has had two surgeries and is stable, but continue to pray for Pastor Charles Jennings that he recovers fully, that his health is restored, and that he's able to continue in his pastorate. And Gary R. emailed, and he said, please pray for me. I've come down with severe anxiety, and I have no idea why. I've prayed and prayed, but so far no relief has come, and I haven't slept in days. Please hold Gary up in your prayers. I can understand the anxiety. My beautiful wife, Leslie, suffers from some anxiety issues. It's gotten better since she is no longer teaching. And it wasn't the children that she was anxious, it was the parents and the administration. She was fine with the children, but it was, well, if you know parents today, they're not the parents that people my generation grew up with. It seems more entitlement, more me-centered than worrying about the education of their children. What are you going to do for me? And that led to a lot of her anxiety. And please hold Rich, Sandra's husband, up in your prayers. He's having a couple health issues and not sure exactly what it is, but just pray for healing for Sandra's husband, Rich. He is a tremendous gentleman, and he has been a blessing to this ministry as well as to Sandra. Okay. Now I want to dive in. This was an article in The Blaze written by Joseph McKinnon. And I know The Blaze is run by a Mormon, Glenn Beck. Okay. They still put out good articles. And in this one, Mr. McKinnon talks about the fact that millions of Americans across our country were told that they needed to roll up their sleeves and take the jab during the corona scamdemic. And if they didn't roll up their sleeves, they could lose their jobs. They weren't allowed to eat in public. They couldn't stay in school. They couldn't even visit their loved ones. Between government officials, establishment media, and pharmaceutical representatives, they were bombarded with propaganda claiming that these jabs were safe and effective. Well, in an internal letter, the FDA admits that the COVID-19 jabs killed numerous children. Think about that. Killed numerous children. Dr. Vinay Prasad, chief medical officer at the FDA and director at the Center for Biologics Evaluation and Research, noted in an email to staff that FDA Office of Biostatistics and Pharmacovigilance career staff, quote, have found that at least 10 children have died after and because of receiving COVID-19 vaccination, close quote. Wow. Now, Prasad indicated that the OBPV performed an analysis of 96 deaths between 2021 and 2024 and concluded that no fewer than 10 are related to the jab. You and I both know that number is most probably an underestimate because of underreporting and an inherent bias in attribution. It was settled science, wasn't it? Oh, trust the science. Dr. Fauci was science. And if you didn't take him at his word, you didn't trust science. Fauci was a liar. He was a fraud chief. And that's why I have named him that. But Fauci, along with the director of the CDC, Rochelle Walensky, as well as other health officials, were pushing the jab on kids with this mRNA jab, this poison. On November 2nd, 2021, President Biden's health officials gave final approval to Pfizer's COVID-19 shots for kids ages 5 to 11. Biden said, quote, it is a major step forward for our nation in our fight to defeat the virus, close quote. Jabs for children under 5 began in June of 2022. But Dr. Prasad, in his note, in his email, noted that despite evidence that the jab put boys and young men at great risk of getting myocarditis, Biden health officials did not quickly attempt to mitigate strategies such as spacing doses apart, lowering doses, or omitting doses among those with prior COVID-19. Natural immunity. I had it twice. The second time I got it from my mom, it was a Christmas present a few years ago. That's all she got me was COVID. Wasn't as bad as the first time, but the first time wasn't that bad. It was like having the flu. Whoa, 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 wait a minute. That's because it was the flu. I said it was propaganda. Now, was it a bioengineered weapon? Yes, it was engineered, but it was still a flu bug that had been doctored. But Dr. Prasad continued. He said, quote, worse, the FDA delayed acknowledgement of the safety signal until after it could extend marketing authorization to younger boys 12 to 15. They didn't care that it was killing children, that it was ruining the lives of these young men, that myocarditis, pericarditis, was a major health concern because of the jab for these young men. And I'm going to tell you, I saw a young man on the football field in a college football game with my eyes. I was on the scene. I swear he died on that field, and I know he had to have the jab to play. And I will go to my grave believing that the jab caused that young man's heart attack and for him to lay motionless on the field while they brought out defibrillators and did CPR to get that young man breathing before they could transport him to the hospital. I don't know if he ever played another college football game again or not, but I blame the jab. And I blame Biden and Fauci and Walensky and all of the people involved in pushing this jab, mandating this jab. Prasad also wrote, quote, healthy young children who face tremendously low risk of death, get that, low risk of death, were coerced at the behest of the Biden administration via school and work mandates to receive a vaccine that could result in death. In many cases, such mandates were harmful, close quote. This hoax, this scam still draws my ire. I did a number of programs on it, and it still sticks in my craw that we pushed through a jab that killed people. We concocted a PCR test, misused it to prove that people had the Rona to force some hospitalization. They were killing people in the hospital. And it, man, just how many Americans have suffered unbelievable reactions to these jabs, altering their life forever. Can't get it back. All right, we're going to move on. This is another one that I've talked about in the past, the liberalization of the church. This was an article in Blabberbuzz by Jennifer Wentworth, but allowing the liberal ideology into the church doctrine has corrupted many churches across America. These far-left ideologies are influencing the church like you cannot imagine. Now, there are some who have resisted this leftward swing, but many others embrace it. There has been a surge in ultra-progressive churches that are more focused on the LGBTQ movement and diversity than the foundational teachings of Jesus Christ. One such church is in Evanston, Illinois, the Lake Street Church. Well, they had to make a splash, so they started controversy by using the nativity scene in its opposition to Trump's immigration policies. In this nativity scene at the Lake Street Church in Evanston, Illinois, they depict baby Jesus with his hands in zip ties and a Mylar blanket. Now, if you recall, the Mylar blanket was during the Obama administration when he put all those children in cages. Not Trump, but Obama. But the church, the woke church in Illinois, has baby Jesus with zip ties around his hands and a Mylar blanket. Mary and Joseph are wearing gas masks. I guess they are the immigration protesters. And the Roman soldiers are dressed as immigration and custom enforcement agents. The church stated that, quote, this installation reimagines the nativity as a scene of forced family separation, close quote. The church further explained this scene was designed to challenge viewers to reconcile their religious or moral values with immigration policies. Oh, my, my, my. The Lake Street Church's interpretation is indicative of a focus on social activism more so than on spreading the gospel. Woke churches. Good night, nurse. Well, I mentioned my wife was a teacher for 29 years. She taught kindergarten, second, third, and fourth grade. She retired as a third grade teacher. And to answer your question, no, I'm not smarter than a third grader. She would ask me questions that she was teaching in the classroom at certain times of the year, and I didn't know the answer. So obviously I'm not smarter than a third grader. But I can read, and I credit my elementary school teachers for teaching me how to read utilizing phonics. Now, they got away from that back in the 70s and 80s. They started pushing this word recognition. All this. They keep thinking they've got a better way. But there is nothing wrong with teaching the three R's. Reading, writing, arithmetic. And in Mississippi, in 2013, they ranked 49th out of 50 states in grade 4 reading achievement on the National Assessment of Educational Progress. 49th out of 50. They fixed that. In 2019, the state had moved up to 29th place. And last year, they finished in 9th place on reading test scores. According to this article by Joseph McKinnon in Conservative Review, Black students in Mississippi ranked third nationally last year among their cohorts for reading and math scores in Mississippi. Hispanic students in the state ranked first in the nation for reading and second for math scores. The poor students in Mississippi ranked first for reading and second for math scores nationally. In most states, these scores have been falling over the past decade. They call this a miracle, the Mississippi miracle. But it's attributable to the state's 2013 Literacy-Based Promotion Act, the LBPA, which conservative commentator Rich Lowry noted effectively came down to adopting phonics and setting higher standards for students. The three pillars of the LBPA are improving teaching, there's a novel idea, identifying and helping kids with reading deficiencies, and holding back third graders who can't hack it on an end-of-year reading assessment. Keep them in third grade one more year so that they can master reading. What a concept. Unlike some states that just promote, push them up, get them out of here. No, not in Mississippi. Now, Alabama, Louisiana, and Tennessee are employing similar strategies. Good for them. The Secretary of Education, Linda McMahon, said, quote, "What I'm seeing now is a great return to classical learning," close quote. The three R's. Now we need to work in civics and maybe a little Bible study. We might get back to being the America that I grew up in. Might. Meanwhile, the demon rats in Michigan have repealed reforms that are similar to what's going on in Mississippi. They have eliminated the A to F grade ranking system for every public school. They have scrapped the requirement that illiterate third graders get held back. So that, like I said, they just push them on. Get them out of here. They're useless eaters. They'll be the ones that'll be working construction. They'll be holding a sign for guiding traffic while they're working on the road repair crew. Or they'll be slinging burgers at Wendy's. But they won't be productive citizens. They won't be potential business owners. They're handicapping the children in Michigan. Last year, the average score of fourth grade students in Mississippi for reading was 219 out of 500. The average score in Michigan was 209, lower than 31 other states. Keep going, Whitmer, and my buddy Mark Calder, Governor Whitmer up in Michigan. Brother Mark, y'all need to fix the voting system up there and get rid of these idiots, because they are handicapping your entire state. God bless you, my friend. Well, I came across this one. This was in ZeroHedge.com, one of my go-tos for news articles. Tyler Durden does a great job over there. Well, he gleaned this one from Military.com, written by Mark Price. There is a secretive Fort Bragg operation that specializes in influencing people's thoughts, and they have released a recruitment video laced with hidden meanings and strange images. They are known as the 4th Psychological Operations Airborne, or 4th PSYOP. The group specializes in using the power of the mind to persuade opinion and discourse among the nation's enemies. Maybe even its citizens. I don't know. But I've got a clip, just a partial clip. A lot of this is visual. I can't play that because it won't come across on this audio program. I'm sorry. But you can look up this 4th PSYOP recruiting ad. I've got just a little snippet of what they're talking.
There's another force applied in combat that we generally don't think of as a weapon of war. That weapon is words. Words are weapons.
Telling the truth is the only way in which to influence people.
This is psychological warfare.
Words are weapons. This is psychological warfare. So it was released, I guess sometime in the month of November. And it racked up more than 15,000 views on Facebook. And it references conspiracy theories. At one point, the phrase, "anything we touch is a weapon," flashes and fades. The U.S. Army noted in a 2024 article that the ideal candidate for psychological operations is, quote, "very cerebral and analytical," close quote. According to a U.S. Army report, quote, "tools of the trade are logic, fear, desire, and other mental factors used to evoke specific emotions, attitudes, and behaviors. The ultimate objective is to persuade enemy, neutral, and friendly nations and forces to take favorable actions towards the U.S. and its allies," close quote. Now, the 4th PSYOP is based out of Fort Bragg, one of the largest military installations in the country. How interesting. Recruiting for psychological warfare. Very interesting. Came across this. This was, I don't remember where I got this from. Might have been Twitter. Could have been on Citizen Free Press. Could have been on the Gateway Pundit, which is probably where it was now that I think back on it. But nearly every house in America has at least a few of these red and white cans in their pantry. I have two or three right now for when Leslie or I get a cold. What is the one thing that we all turn to when we got a cold? Chicken noodle soup from Campbell's. But maybe I'll have to dispose of it after this leaked recording was revealed. It claims the soups of Campbell's soups contain lab-grown meat, or, as this guy says, quote, "chicken that came from a 3D printer," close quote. This guy was Martin Bally. He's one of the vice presidents of Campbell's. I think he's over their information security office. And he was meeting with Robert Garza, a cybersecurity analyst, and they were discussing Mr. Garza's salary. Mr. Garza secretly recorded this meeting, and he was astonished by the statements that Martin Bally made. He went on a rant that lasted over an hour. Well, local 4 News in Detroit got a hold of the recording, and they played a snippet, and you can hear Bally saying something that, I'm sorry to say, there are some bleeps in here because the guy is a foul-mouthed pig, but listen to what he says about Campbell's soup.
We have shit for f***ing poor people. Who buys our shit? I don't buy f***ing Campbell's products barely anymore. It's healthy. Now that I know what the f*** in it, even in a can of soup, I look at it, look at me, bioengineered meat. I don't want to eat a piece of chicken that came from a 3D printer, you?
No, I really don't want to eat a piece of chicken that came from a 3D printer. But he admits that the soup is garbage for poor people. That was his main rant. Now, Mr. Garza, the employee, decided in January of 2025 to report this to his direct supervisor. 20 days later, Mr. Garza was terminated. Coincidence? Maybe not. Maybe not. But he has since filed a lawsuit against Campbell's Soups. He accuses the soup company of maintaining a racially hostile work environment and retaliating against him for reporting discriminatory conduct. Now, a spokesperson for Campbell's told Newsweek, quote, "If the recording is legitimate, the comments are unacceptable. Mr. Bally is temporarily on leave while we conduct an investigation," close quote. Bioengineered meat. Doesn't it make you warm and fuzzy? Now, there are those that say that this is going to be the wave because it's cleaner for the environment. The animals aren't kept locked up, so they're not mistreated. And I am a member of PETA. Yes, people eating tasty animals. I love chicken. I love beef. I love venison. I love fish. Never had duck, but I love rabbit. But lab-grown meat, because, well, cows have methane, and methane from the cows leads to global warming and all of this garbage. No, I don't want lab-grown meat. I want the real thing. Oh, my, my, my. But this Campbell's soup is junk that we make for poor people. What a glowing endorsement of your employer. You're a vice president of Campbell's soup saying this garbage. Once I found out what was in it, I ain't eating it. We make this junk for poor people. Well, if you're a VP, you're not going to be eating that garbage anyway. You probably go to Progresso or maybe something along that lines, or maybe you've got your maid or your chef, your personal chef, making homemade soups and stews, and you don't have to resort to going to the grocery store and buying this garbage 3D printed meat. But to fire a whistleblower who points out that this guy is lambasting this company. He didn't release it to the media until after he had turned it over to his direct superior. And within a month, he was terminated. That is, well, that's not a company that you really want to support, is it? I don't know. I still haven't gone back to Cracker Barrel, and I love Cracker Barrel. Well, I used to, until I found out they supported Gay Pride, and they funneled millions of dollars to Gay Pride events. And then the woke CEO tried to change the environment. I haven't been able to bring myself to go back to Cracker Barrel, and I think I'm going to have to 86 the couple cans of chicken noodle soup I got and find something else or maybe make my own stock. I don't know. Well, that's going to take care of the first half. I want to thank you for giving me some of your time. I have to take a brief pause. When I come back, we're going to dive right back into Secrets. We're up to volume number 350. You're listening to Power of Prophecy. Stay with us, won't you? I'll be right back. Hello, friends. Jerry Barrett back with you again. We have a brand new book that we are offering through the ministry. It's entitled One Nation under blackmail. Actually, it is a 2-volume set. Following World War II, every U.S. administration has aligned itself with the drug traffickers, arms dealers, branches of the mob, known enemies of the state, assassins, and involved itself with murder, smuggling, human trafficking, the sex trade, Ponzi schemes, money laundering, bank fraud, and many other illegal activities. Exhaustively researched, Whitney Webb's One Nation Under Blackmail is a damning indictment of the consequences resulting from the nearly century-old relationship between both U.S. and Israeli intelligence, along with the organized crime network known as the National Crime Syndicate. This book explores how that nexus between intelligence and organized crime directly developed the sexual blackmail tactics and networks that would later enable the sexual blackmail operation and other crimes of pedophile and sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein. Discover a comprehensive history of the interconnectivity between sections of the government, the military-industrial complex, the banking industry, and organized crime and sexual blackmail. While other books on Jeffrey Epstein focus on the depraved nature of his crimes, his wealth, and his most famous politically connected friends and acquaintances, this book reveals the extent to which Epstein's activities were state-sponsored through an exploration of his intelligence connections. This is a 2-volume set. We're only asking $45. Please add $6 shipping and handling. That'll make your total $51 for One Nation Under Blackmail. You can order your copy today by phoning us toll-free in the United States and Canada at 1-800-234-9673. If you care to phone our regular line, that number is 512-263-9780. We're in the office Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Central Time. We accept Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and American Express. You can use those charge cards at our secure shopping cart at powerofprophecy.com. There's an ad for this book on the main page. Now, if you care to send in a check, money order, or cash, please make your check or money order payable to Power of Prophecy, and you can mail it to us here at 4819 R.O. Drive, Suite 102, Spicewood, Texas, and our zip code is 78669. You need to get your copy today. I was flabbergasted when I read it. Okay, and now let's return to our regular program. Today we're covering Secrets, volume number 350. Found this in Breitbart.com. Nearly 500 employees in Minnesota state government say Governor Tim Walz ignored their constant warnings about massive fraud by Somalis of the state's aid programs. They also say Walz retaliated against them for exposing the corruption in the state's Somali community. Now, this group of employees has been operating an account on X or Twitter, and they have done so for the last several years. On this account, they have warned the public of a number of cases of fraud and theft that's in this aid program. In a November 29th post, this group said, quote, Tim Walz is 100% responsible for massive fraud in Minnesota. We let Tim Walz know of fraud early on, hoping for a partnership in stopping fraud, but no. We got the opposite response, close quote. They continued, quote, Tim Walz systematically retaliated against whistleblowers using monitoring, threats, repression, and did his best to discredit fraud reports. Instead of partnership, we got the full weight of retaliation by Tim Walz and an indifferent mainstream media. It's scary, isolating, and left us wondering who we can turn to. Close quote. Well, I know who you can turn to. How about U.S. Treasury Secretary Bessent? He wrote on X, quote, "At my direction, the Treasury Department is investigating allegations that under the mismanagement of the Biden administration and Governor Tim Walz, hardworking Minnesotans' tax dollars may have been diverted to the terrorist organization Al-Shabaab. We are acting fast to ensure Americans' taxes are not funding acts of global terror." Close quote. But this fraud is endemic all across Minnesota's welfare and aid programs, not just the Department of Human Services. One of the first cases centered around Feeding Our Future, which is run by a group of Minneapolis area Somali migrants. Prosecutors say these organizers built $250 million from the state in child food assistance funding. In another case, tens of millions were stolen from Minnesota's autism treatment program by the Somalis. There is also the case of more than $550 million stolen from the state's coronavirus pandemic relief program. So how did the Somalis get in Minnesota? That would be Barack Hussein Obama. Yep, he brought them over, gave them refugee status, set them up, and they're now running Minneapolis, along with a bunch of other cities up there. Well, I've talked about geoengineering in the past. There are so many inherent risks by messing with the Earth's atmosphere, but these climate alarmists are dead set on doing something to cool our planet, even though researchers have said we're in a cooling pattern. But that's not enough for these gloom and doomers that think that the sky is falling. But if these geoengineers go unchecked, that could very well happen. And, I said a few weeks ago, Bill Gates came out and said the climate is not really that big of an issue. He said that it's not really warming. So there's no threat from the climate. I'm paraphrasing, but that's pretty much what Bill Gates said. But Bill Gates is also sending millions of dollars to geoengineering firms that are working on projects to dim the sun. That's right. They want to throw these reflective particles up in the stratosphere that will reflect the sun's radiation and beams and all this back into outer space, unbeknownst to what's going to happen from that. But it'll also cool the planet because we won't get as many UV rays from the sun. So it'll be good for us until that stuff starts falling out of the atmosphere. But that's another story. This was in MSN.com, of all places, written by Nicholas Rivero. He says, "For as little as a dollar, you can dim the sun. You can save the world from climate change." Well, that's the promise that's being sold by a California startup called Make Sunsets. This dollar that you donate will pay the founder, Luke Eisman, to drive his Winnebago up into the hills of Saratoga, California, and release a balloon loaded with sulfur dioxide, which is an air pollutant normally spewed by volcanic eruptions. And he and his 1,000 paying customers hope the balloon will burst in the stratosphere. You get that? Hope. And release these particles to block sunlight and cool the planet. Now, these activities aren't officially approved by any government on Earth, but they're not illegal in California. So far, Make Sunsets has raised more than $1 million and sold more than $100,000 worth of cooling credits to its customers. Now, there's another company called Stardust, which has raised $75 million to develop a more sophisticated geoengineering method. Now, most governments have no specific geoengineering regulations. Tennessee, Louisiana, Florida have banned the practice. Further bans have been proposed in 34 other U.S. states. as well as the federal level and in Mexico. But there are proponents, like Andrew Lockley. He is a British researcher who is formerly affiliated with the University College London. He says he ran his own field tests in 2022, releasing a balloon carrying 400 grams of sulfur dioxide, and he called it the Stratospheric Aerosol Transport and Nucleation Project, S-A-T-A-N. Yep, Satan. He also co-wrote a paper in 2023 arguing that if government fails to solve climate change, people have a right to dim the sun themselves. Now, I mentioned the company Stardust. It was founded in 2023 by Yanai Yedvab and Amjad Spector, their nuclear physicists who met in an Israeli national lab, along with particle physicist Eli Waxman. They have a staff of 25 scientists which are developing a new reflective particle, which they say, get this, won't make people sick or thin the ozone layer. I just got warm and fuzzy when I read that. So is the junk that makes sunsets putting up there poison for the human? Quite possibly. But none of these guys understand cause and effect, do they? Do they really? Or are they so full of ideals that they cannot fathom the effects that could be negative? Oh no, it's all sunshine and rainbows and blue skies and pretty roses and everything's going to be fabulous. Maybe. Maybe not. But we'll see where Stardust goes in the next year or so. They claim they're going to put out some papers and peer-reviewed studies, blah, 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 whatever. Dimming the sun. I think they're dim-witted, if you want my opinion. Speaking of dimwits, came across this. This was a video from 1989 when Joe Biden was still in the Senate. Bush was the president, and he delivered a message on television representing the Demon Rat Party, telling Bush to do more to stop the flow of drugs into the country. Biden said the Democrats wanted to create a strike force to attract drug dealers before they reach our border. Now, listen to this. This is Biden, 1989. He's more coherent, for sure. 1989.
Every president for the past two decades, Democrat and Republican alike, has declared war on drugs. And each of them has lost that war and lost it miserably. They lost because they attempted to deal with only part of the drug problem. They lost because their initiatives were pulled apart by bureaucratic squabbling among their advisors. They lost because they always did too little and they did it too late. We don't oppose the president's plan. All we want to do is strengthen it. We don't doubt his resolve. All we want to do is stiffen it. The trouble is that the president's proposals are not big enough to deal with the problem. We think we should do more to stem the flow of drugs across our borders, and we think we should go one step further. Let's go after the drug lords where they live, with an international strike force. There must be no safe haven for these narco-terrorists, and they must know it. We have to lock up the dealers for a long, long time. And we have to attack the source from which the drugs come. And we have to do that, not a piece at a time, but all at once. And we have to do it now. And there's not any reason why we can't do that. We have the power, we have the money, and we have the knowledge.
Now, are you as shocked as I am? I don't remember this Biden address, but why is controlled media and all of the demon rats in Congress going bonkers for Pete Hegseth taking out narco-terrorist boats off of the coast of Venezuela? What's up with that? Well, now they need to have due process. They need to have their day in court. How do we know that there's drugs? We have intelligence. We're not just bombing willy-nilly any boat that comes off the coast of Venezuela or even Colombia. But there was a book written by Tom Clancy. It's called Clear and Present Danger. And according to the book that I read, if the president declares that these narco drug running terrorists are a clear and present threat to our country, they can be dealt with militarily. A presidential finding, maybe? Maybe an executive order? I'm not sure how that works. And Clancy didn't explain that part. But if we want to end the drug war, Biden said it. We got to take care of it all. We need to lock up the drug dealers, the pushers, and we need to hit the narco people where it hurts. Makes sense to me. I can agree with Joe Biden on that, but we'll see. Now, there is a lot in the news lately about illegal aliens driving semi-trucks and causing massive mayhem on our highways and byways. Sean Duffy is the Secretary of Transportation, and he has announced a significant crackdown on the trucking schools who are non-compliant. He is signaling an end to what he has called the Wild Wild West era in the trucking industry. There were states issuing CDL licenses to illegal aliens who just said they could drive a truck. And then trucking companies were hiring them. But the Associated Press reported that there is the potential closure of nearly 44% of U.S. truck driving schools following a federal review. Well, Sean Duffy talked about these CDL mills. Got a quick clip from him.
We are going to go after the CDL mills that are issuing licenses across the country, sending a certification in to our state DOTs saying that you have a qualified individual to drive a big rig and licensed in your state, and the truth is they are not. We are going to take a hard look at those individuals, and there will be serious consequences for them.
So after the review by the Department of Transportation, it revealed that approximately 7,500 out of 16,000 truck driving schools could face closure if they do not meet the compliance standards. Nearly 3,000 schools risk losing their certification unless they align with training requirements within the next month. 4,500 additional schools have been cautioned about potential similar actions. The rigorous enforcement aims to eliminate the practice allowing inadequately trained drivers, including those unable to read English or comprehend road signs, from obtaining commercial licenses. Trying to make our highways and byways safer for American citizens. But there is so much more nefariousness going on. Adam Smith penned some very wise words, and it's becoming more apparent every day. He wrote, quote, "Mercy to the guilty is cruelty to the innocent," close quote. In other words, our justice system is a joke. But let's revisit Mr. Smith's quote. He doesn't say mercy to those accused of a crime. He says mercy to the guilty, meaning this person has been proven guilty of a crime. There are a number of cases where the accused have been convicted of crimes. And we have witnessed over and over again repeat offenders who are let off with a slap on the hand and an ankle monitor not only commit more crimes, but also escalate their offenses. Let's go back to Irina Zarutska. She was stabbed by a man with a rap sheet a mile long. Logan Frederico was senselessly shot by a man with 40 previous criminal charges. Ronald Exanthus murdered a 6-year-old Kentucky boy named Logan Tipton. He was let out of prison early on good behavior. Bethany McGee is fighting for her life after a man on a Chicago train poured gas on her and set her on fire. This man is a career criminal, previously arrested 72 times. Get that? Arrested 72 times, convicted in 15 of these cases. According to the New York Post, one of those busts included an aggravated arson charge. Are you surprised that Lawrence Reed didn't serve any jail time and was only given probation despite being convicted of this arson incident in April of 2020? The prosecutor wanted him locked up, but the judge released him. Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson refuses to see a problem here. He said, quote, "We cannot incarcerate our way out of violence. It is racist. It is immoral. It is unholy." But think about this. The compassion that they extend to these criminals who were so-called victims of the system of inequality, racism, and sexism is a hoax. It's garbage. They are not so-called victims. They are criminals. They care less about anybody else but themselves. The demon rats think that you need to show them compassion, not punishment. Well, if you ask Nayib Bukele, the president of El Salvador, he'll explain to you what really goes on. You can incarcerate yourself out of violence. That's what he's done, and he's cleaned up El Salvador. He said, quote, "In El Salvador, we have chosen to prioritize the safety of honest citizens over the comfort of criminals. Some say that we have imprisoned thousands of people, but the truth is that we have freed millions. Today, honest people can move about freely without fear, with full respect for their freedoms and human rights. Unlike America." My goodness. New York City, you just elected Zohran Mamdani. He is hell-bent on continuing the downward spiral that New York City is facing. Before he ran for the mayor, he pushed defunding the police. Now, he backtracked to get votes, but the leopard doesn't change his spots. Mamdani has appointed over 400 people to various committees to help him transition. One of these is Alex Vital. Another is Cassandra Frederick. Vital is on the Committee on Community Safety. Frederick is a director of Drug Policy Alliance, the nation's leading advocate for drug legalization. Alex Vital wrote a book called The End of Policing, in which he calls for the complete abolition of policing. He calls the police violence workers. He asserts that the police are, quote, "fundamentally a tool of social control to facilitate our exploitation," close quote. He wants to shut down the gang database in New York City. He supports decriminalizing prostitution. Meanwhile, Frederick wants to end the criminalization of drugs, not only for users, but also for dealers. Could there be a problem, do you think? New York? I don't know. We'll see. It seems the blue cities are only going to get worse before they wake up and remove these corrupt leaders. One can only hope. Goodness. I have to get to this one. It was written by Tim O'Brien and PJ Media. This is an outstanding article. It's entitled, "America Has a Police Chief Problem." Mr. O'Brien writes, "Anytime a big city police chief exhibits massive amounts of wokeness, that chief is usually standing at a podium in a shiny police uniform with all the flair the office provides. When they speak, they seem to betray everything we think law enforcement is supposed to stand for. Let's face it, they wear the uniform, but honestly, these are politicians." Mr. O'Brien says, Exhibit A. Police Chief Brian O'Hara from Minneapolis. He gives some helpful tips to illegal Somalians should the federal government show up to send them back home. I thought police chiefs were supposed to be all about enforcing the law, but not breaking it. I must have missed something. Listen to Chief O'Hara.
Folks that are masked, that they're not sure if they're law enforcement, that they may be kidnapping people. Like, we have had those reports. I want to be clear to the community. The community should know that if you see something like that, that is legitimate, that you don't know if someone is law enforcement, you should call 911. And you should provide as much information as possible, because let's not forget, we very recently had tragedy in this state by someone who was purporting to be law enforcement. So please, let's be clear. That's something everyone should report, and that we will immediately respond to, and we will document, whether it's somebody's not sure if there's a kidnapping happening, somebody's not sure if there's law enforcement present or not. And that's something else that's additional policy requirements that we are implementing, that we will document and report these types of things anytime that we hear it, and reminding our officers of their duty to intervene. So if there is anything that is, a violation of someone's human rights or civil rights, excessive force or anything like that, they absolutely have a duty to intervene as police officers.
Okay. Last I looked, these ICE agents have immigration customs labels across their back. They're wearing their vests. But this guy says that they're getting kidnapped. That's a liberal term for rounding up criminal illegal aliens. But they don't want to say that. Can't say that. Well, number two, or exhibit B, I guess. Bob Day, the embattled police chief in Portland, Oregon. Instead of arresting protesters, he prefers crowd support. And if you see his department in action, you have to wonder whose side it's on. His method of policing has left federal ICE agents exposed, while violent protesters have attacked them, their vehicles, and their facilities. This has occurred in Day's city for over 100 consecutive evenings. But when conservative journalist Nick Sorter swooped into town to document Bob Day's failures, Bob Day attacked Nick Sorter, the reporter. Listen to this.
I wanted to ask you about an arrest that took place, obviously very high profile. It was Nick Sorter, who is a conservative influencer and journalist. He says that he was simply covering the protest, but he has, of course, been charged there with disorderly conduct. What can you tell me about that arrest overall?
Well, what we're seeing with the increased national attention is bringing in nationally recognized influencers. This is certainly a new phenomenon for myself and for law enforcement in general, and their reach is obviously very significant, and so they're going where they can get the views and create the perception. And our belief is that we are simply managing to the rule of law. Our role is to mitigate crimes, violence, et cetera. There was a disturbance involving Mr. Sorter. We took three people into custody, and those cases have been referred to the district attorney's office.
Okay, Nick Sorter is a journalist. He's a reporter. But according to Bob Day, he is an influencer. Goodness gracious. Do you think it's time that we recognize that big city police chiefs in America are just political appointees whose primary job is to enforce the mayor's political agenda? To keep their jobs, they must be political. This means their decisions on which laws to enforce and which ones not to enforce are driven by political calculations. Political. Not your safety, not my safety. Political ideology. Goodness gracious. Well, that's going to take care of this week's program. I want to thank you for tuning in and giving me an hour of your time. I greatly appreciate it. And as always, I pray you will tune in again next week at this same time. Tune in and discover the power of prophecy.